Okay, today Tungshan's second mode in the second cycle is entitled Service. And it is translated by Eiken Roshi like this. For whom do you bathe and make yourself presentable? The voice of the cuckoo urges you to come home. Hundreds of flowers fall, yet the voice is not stilled. Even deep in jumbled peaks, it is calling clearly. The first line of this quatrain follows quite nicely from yesterday's first line. An old woman, oversleeping at daybreak, encounters the ancient mirror. The flow, then, is so natural. She arises, oversleeping at daybreak, and looks in the mirror. And after a few small chores and morning zazen, she goes off to bathe and make herself presentable. Tungshan is reminding us, Eiken Roshi says, of the noble nature we serve. We wash away our ideas and concepts, our sense of a you and an I, our self-enclosed defenses, and we prepare ourselves. We ready ourselves to continue practicing, but now with a slightly different emphasis. The movement to service is quite natural when our own preoccupations and self-centeredness have finally loosened, allowing the world to move in and fully inhabit us. We become more porous and the sound of the bell takes up residence. Bong! Or the scream of the gull moves in, or the shriek of the eagle. The whole world moves in like the breath or sigh or heartbeat of the person sitting next to you, and we are touched, caressed in a way that until now was unfathomable. The first mode in the second cycle was titled Orientation. The literal translation of orientation is turning toward or directing toward. So again, as we move into this second mode, the direction or bearing to serve has already been set or established. Service in this practice is not something forced, but a natural extension or expression of our own deepest nature. It is something we want to do, responding now to a call that naturally finds a quiet but already present echo in our hearts. The simultaneous call and response from the world to our hearts and our hearts to the world is actually not a call and response, but two calls that happen and respond in utter synchronization. Nothing else is needed to fuel that meeting. It is utterly unavoidable. Like two young lovers who haven't seen each other for some time, collapsing into each other's arms on that first meeting. The word service comes from the root, meaning slave. The point here is that we are now serving our own noble potential. We're serving the sage kings and queens that are in waiting. And we do this by bathing and putting on clothes. We do this by putting our shoes outside the Zendo door and bowing. We do this by coming in and sitting down, forgetting ourselves, giving ourselves up in each moment. We're serving ourselves by forgetting ourselves. We're serving ourselves by dropping away body and mind, thus being known as all things, thus being known by all things. Why does this turning toward move so naturally into service? When we drop our self-centered concerns and preoccupations, we begin to notice that the world is continually moving towards us. It is continually calling us to come home. It bathes us in the dawn's moonlight. It sets down a golden path across the water, leading to the Zendo. The lone loon calls with a heartbreaking tenderness, and we are transfixed, unable to move forward. We are filled and begin to overflow. And with a nearly unnoticeable syncopation, tears begin to fall, and we bow quite naturally to the moon, to the disappearing stars. We bow quite naturally to the invisible sun and to the visiting loon. All of these here for you, all here as you. How could you not give tears as time is torn open? How could you not bow as space is rented? A giving up of oneself. And what is left, if anything, is the need, the desire to give up all the more. We begin to notice the world's giving in all moments. The giving of flowers and of mountains. The giving of rivers and trees and bushes. We notice the giving of rocks and of ants and of birds. Each giving their own unique discourse on Dharma for those willing and able to hear. The whole world constantly giving Taisho the great shout of joy and happiness. The great presentation by all things of all things as they are. Who would not want to be part of this great shout and add to it? And we do this by attending to the world's needs, by attending to the world's hopes, and by attending to the world's great suffering, thus becoming part of the ever-deepening Taisho. So it is fresh water. But is tonight's moon the same as last night's moon? So we have a new dog at home, a puppy. And I'm continually struck and gladdened when I see him sometimes leap and spin in the air for no real reason. Some say this is what puppies do, and I suppose it is. But I see it as life itself, hardly able to contain itself in the form it has taken. And that jump and spin is life overcome by its own delight and by its own joy in being. How the more powerful to be that filled with life when you have encountered sickness, old age, and death. How the more powerful when you have suffered and been with suffering and pain, and yet your heart is still overflowing with life. This expression and this type of joy happens with practice, as you are more touched by the world's continual giving and touched by the world's continual calling, as more love letters arrive at your own mailbox. And with that continual arriving, you want to be in kinship or in kind. So we naturally respond to the letters with our own. During the day, pay attention to what is being offered. Someone each day gives you a sutra book, serves you tea, serves you lunch. What is really being offered? What is it truly that you are receiving? Each of these offerings is actually a giving of oneself, and you are actually receiving yourself. Sometimes as a sutra book, sometimes as tea, sometimes as admonishment, sometimes as bread and cheese. Be careful. Pay attention. At this moment, let moo do moo. Let the sounds of who hears fill you up. Let the numbers count you. Allow each offering moo. Allow each receiving moo. Fresh water again. How is that possible? Hundreds of flowers fall, yet the voice is not stilled. Even deep in jumbled peaks, it is clearly calling. So our delusions are falling away, dropping like flowers in autumn. We are porous and can no longer delineate inside from outside, king from queen, sages from snakes. Yet, fortunately, the voice is still calling. The bell calls you home, the clappers, home. The footsteps, the bush tits, the snails, more and more subtle calling. Calling for you to continue giving yourself up again and again. However, although we have oriented our compasses and our direction is set, still the misty fog of spring mornings can obscure the coastline. And sometimes it is hard to tell depths from shallows. And if the tide is out and we are in the shallows, bruising rocks and bare points can prove troublesome. We will suffer at those times, and those around us will suffer. Or maybe a better way to say it is, there is still suffering and pain in this world. It calls in that way also. And we can become unmoored and lost. We can begin to think that what went before was a lucky dream, but a dream only, a mistake. And we can doubt the encounter with the ancient mirror. We can doubt the caress and the touching that we felt. The siren of the sea, Mara, has risen her head again, and we begin to give her shape and form with our doubts. We begin to give her substance and believe the guises taken. So take faith at such a time as this. This is a normal part of the process. Another delusion is being seen for what it is. Somehow we had believed that encountering the ancient mirror and the near simultaneous outburst of gratitude and generosity would last forever. It is not that that was a high with now a compensating low for rebalancing. It is just that this is still early in the process, and now you have taken another natural, maturing step. There still is pain. There still is suffering. And you may be looking past that for something else, not yet realizing that those craggy rocks and dry headlands are it also. That too is the calling. Those are more love letters, but in another language yet, one not so easily understood, deciphered, or then accepted. But with your now maturing Zazen practice and your maturing life, you do not have to just react. You do not have to take all things so personally. You can, if even for simply a moment, return right here to this session. You can, if even for a moment, return to Mu, for where would it have gone? You can return to this breath. You can return, if even for a moment, to this world of rest and joy, to this body, which is the Buddha, to this land, which is the Lotus Land, and then step forth from that place. With the stepping forth, things may still be painful. The situation may still be critical. But in no time at all, you will begin to hear that pain, that critical stress also, as the calling of your own truest nature. You will hear that too as the calling of your own deepest heart. At such a time as this, you may begin to hear the other's anger simply as fear. You may begin to hear their pain as longing. You may be able to hear the ignorance as a need to connect, and the greed as a cry of the feeling of homelessness. But of course, still you and I will step forth and act inappropriately again and again and again. But it is from that place, from that step, each time new, that you will come forth. And from there, from that mistake, now your practice begins. And then from that mistake, now your practice begins. Turning a mistake, a failing, into a positive thing, as a zafu and a zabutan, as a place to take your next breath and again touch the world of rest and joy. And so I'll end there. And so again, from that place, your practice will begin.